cannot disappear.
Maybe hit him high, but what else can he do? He can't disappear.
In slow motion, it looks a little bit bad, but
accidents happen. They do.
He's done it. There's his stage. Well, this is incredible.
Out will come the magic sponge. There it is.
No scissors, no tape. Just a dirty old sponge, and it's worked. The sponge can wipe out a pandemic. It can cure us all.
Yes, welcome back to the Magic Sponge podcast, the miracle cure for all your rugby league injury issues. I'm Ryan Sini. I'm the guy behind all the things you see behind NRL Physio on social media. Co-host James, he's here as well. It's Sunday night. Mate, a bit of a somber day. Well, it's a bittersweet day, I'll say, because footy is back, but the Bronx, your Bronx, unfortunately got rolled. Mate, how are you feeling? I mean, it must be good to have footy back, but a bit of a rough day.
Bittersweet's a good one, Brian. That probably captures the feelings and the sentiments of the present. So a little bit disappointing for the Bronx, but I think the Roosters and the Broncos are going to be thereabouts this year, aren't they? They're pretty handy teams. So not all doom and gloom for us. I think better days ahead for the Brizzy Broncos. But yeah, pretty pumped up to see how the Vegas thing has worked out, and pretty interested to sort of hear about how that's going to be sort of a thing moving forward, or whether it is or not, and what they're looking at there. It's an interesting space when you compare it to the other codes, isn't it?
Mate, I'm hoping we'll be there next year or the year after if we can swing it with the wives and the kids, see how we go. I got a message from someone just before we came on and said, who's over there at the moment, and said, you have to do it. It's like Magic Round on steroids. And I was like, oh mate.
Stop it. Say less.
Yeah, I'm like, you could not be preaching more to the choir sending me a message like that. So, I mean, we'll be at Magic Round, obviously, this year, love and life, but hopefully Vegas next year would be lovely. Maybe we'll do a Magic Sponge business trip, you know, get a few write-offs on tax, see how 100%. We go. I'll just say off the top, I apologize to everyone if I do cough on occasion. I have been rankly ill for the last week and a half. I've never had over a week off work, I think, in my entire career. And this week, it's been a bad week and a bit. So I've got my cough lollies and my water here. So hopefully should be right, but we'll see how we go. Guys, look, worth mentioning, we're on YouTube now. So please jump over. If you search NRL Physio on YouTube, I think youtube.com/NRL Physio, you know, subscribe, give us a review, thumbs up, all that kind of stuff. You know, we're trying to get as much stuff out there video-wise as we can too, and hopefully you guys are appreciating that side of things as well. As always, the injury profiles are up. We're getting towards the, you know, the business end of it all. People picking all their Supercoach and fantasy teams. I mean, some of the games have already started. We'll speak about, you know, a guy like Brennan Piacura tonight, whose injury history is only available on the injury profiles. You're not going to get it anywhere else, I don't think. Not collated like this anyway. So yeah, patreon.com/NRLphysio. This show is going to always be your one-stop shop for all things injury analysis in the NRL. So we'll go through the in-game injuries from today, and we'll talk about all the rehab and injury news from the last couple of weeks as well since the last pod. We'll loop it all back to Supercoach fantasy, that kind of thing. As I said, if you get any value out of this, patreon.com/NRLphysio. We've got the new chat function. We're hitting that pretty hard. As I said, it's a bit like Discord, but on Patreon. Any sort of injury info I get that might not be confirmed yet, but it's pretty solid, I talk about it in there. Got the most detailed casualty ward on the internet. That's going to be going up Tuesday night or Wednesday lunchtime this week, so that'll be up. Detailed write-ups, Q&A's, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, get on over there. Otherwise, let's run through the injuries. We have game injuries to run through.
I don't know exactly what he's done. I would have thought it was an ankle, but I'm just guessing.
He shouldn't be out for a long period of time. And I'm no doctor. We have to wait for the scans, obviously, but that'd be more positive than negative.
First game of the 2024 season, Brian. We're making rugby league great again, incorporating America into the rugby league discourse. How good. Game one, so we got Manly versus the Bunnies. Out of this game, Jai Arrow, ankle and shoulder injuries. He just was a little bit banged up in this game, Jai Arrow, wasn't he? I didn't sort of look too hard at what he was nursing out of that. Jason Saab looks like a moderate to high-grade hamstring, and Ruben Garrick was an inversion ankle injury. Time that you'd expect these guys to miss, Brian. Is there any that concern you? I guess Jason Saab's the one that stands out, isn't it?
Jason Saab is definitely the one that stands out here. I think you've got a guy whose game is largely built around sprinting, high-end sprinting, acceleration. You know, he's not overly known for busting through tackles or, you know, making 40 tackles a game, those kind of things. So especially when you see a guy like this suffer a hamstring injury when he's really accelerating, getting towards that full sprint, which he was. Like, you know, he was looking, if the ball came out to him, he was down the sideline on that play. So he's building up to that speed. The reason I mention that is look, it is hard to predict severity of these kind of injuries just from video. But where you do start to really worry is when there's big forces going through the hamstring. And for a guy like him, when he's starting a sprint, there's big forces going through there. And I think Siebes even said it, and you won't hear me saying Siebe said it best very often on this podcast, but I'm going to say it here. He said it best. He's like, look, you very rarely, and it's just not going to happen. You're going to have a guy like that do a hamstring, and it's going to be a 5 to 7 day turnaround, you know, and he's going to be back. They do have 2 weeks till their next game, but my gut is sort of sitting more in that moderate strain, 4 to 6 week kind of range, as opposed to, you know, anything sooner than that. If he gets sooner than that, he should thank his lucky stars, really, because to be sprinting like that, a guy like him, and I think for a guy like him too, he probably has a higher threshold for rehab as well, where, you know, a big front row bopper, their hamstring's not going to be put under as much stress as a guy like Saab, so he's going to need to get that hamstring tippity top to be safe on his return. So, yeah, it's something for Saab that I think he's just going to have that little bit extra time in rehab as opposed to somebody else who's not as reliant on that hamstring for the excellent parts in their game. Jai Arrow with the ankle and shoulder. Ankle, obviously, nothing much to worry about. Probably just a little tweak. That's what it looked like. The shoulder was a bit of a weird one. I've kind of been a bit off these shoulder mechanism injuries since Matt Scott a couple of years ago. This is getting real niche here, but this is just the stuff that goes on in my brain. So I went and found the mechanism, and the guy shot out of the line and hit him. And I think the commentators thought it was from the hit, but then it was actually Arrow got spun around, and he did the whole, like, landed with the elbow into the ground, and he jammed his shoulder up towards his ear. Now, in past times, and I think even if I went back and had a look at that Matt Scott one, I'd say, you know, like, usually probably an AC joint issue. There's a chance for, you know, shoulder instability there as well, but, you know, played on, all that kind of stuff, not really much of a worry. Matt Scott needed shoulder reconstruction surgery not long after that because he caused quite significant damage to the actual shoulder joint, the ball and socket joint as well. So it's not a straightforward, I guess what I'm saying with Jai Arrow is it's not a straightforward, yeah, it's an AC joint, pain management, that kind of thing. There is a little bit of worry there for him. He played out the game, which is obviously fantastic, and he didn't seem too troubled with it because I think he got hit in the head not long after, and that kind of ruffled him a little bit as well. But it's definitely something I've got my eye on. Thankfully, I mean, I'm probably, rubbing some people the wrong way here by saying that I thankfully got Jai Arrow out of my team right at the last minute before he was in. But anybody who's got Jai Arrow, I guess I'm really sorry to say I can't say with much confidence that it's just going to be a minor thing. The fact that he finished the game is the most, I guess, promising thing that we saw there, but it's something that I'm going to be a bit concerned about over the next 2 weeks. Reuben Garrett with the ankle, nothing much there. The most trouble he'll have is on the flight home. That is going to be, because these ankle injuries, they look horrible. You hear me say it all the time, and I think I posted about it, and someone said, I think it was Casey Badger actually commented and said, you know, it didn't take you long to bring out the barks worse than bite, because I try and say that every time. I say that to patients as well, because it just looks horrible and is super painful in the short term, but usually guys can come back for it. But then it's the next day, and Reuben Garrett's going to have to be flying 17 plus hours the next day. So that's going to be, yeah, not a fun flight for him at all.
No, on Jason Saab, mate, just with the hemi, is that same sort as the ACL? So it was right hemi. I just can't remember what side his ACL was. I should have.
If you keep talking,
should have done a bit better research in this one. I was just curious about that because obviously that does put him at higher risk of the injury. But then we're talking higher risk of re-injury, and this sort of leads straight into my tangent here when I'm talking up one of my preseason favorite players is Sobhi Talau.
Left ACL for reference.
Opposite side.
But so I wanted to throw to you about this because
we'll play the narrative. Super coach wise, I would love to see Ruby Garrett go to potentially the wing there maybe left wing, put Jackson Paulo on the right wing and then get Tolman Talau in a centre spot. I think that'd be a really nice little setup there for Manly. I know there's a few guys that say Ray Vega is probably looking on the wing, but I tend to think Talau might have the inside lane there. He's pretty had some pretty good preseason games. We've obviously talked him up extensively on the Sponge, so we want to see a name there. He'd be good for fantasy purposes. He's priced at 287. Lots of like there if you can get Tommy Talau on your team. So anyway, not the same side.
I thought I was going to have to wait all season to clip up that Tommy Talau vision from you rants like for a reel, but I might only have to wait till round two.
Who knows? It might be round two team list. Imagine that far out. That'd be good for me. Good for the brand. Next game, Brian, was the Roosters versus Broncos. Bit of a sad one for yours truly in the Broncos stakes there. Out of this game, Brendan Piacura was a concussion. Then we've got ankle injuries respectively for Satili Tupanua and Siwa Wong. They both had ankle sort of ice packs on their ankle in the sheds after the games there. But both, I think Siwa Wong was back on the field, and I don't know about Tupanua. Billy Smith was really a pre-game with a hamstring injury there. I guess from those four guys, Brian, we don't look like long absences there. To be honest, do we? I don't think.
Yeah, well, I said earlier in the show about Piacura, the interesting thing here is he has a significant concussion history in recent years. So since 2021, that's his fourth documented concussion that I have in the injury profiles. And I'm fairly certain it's hard to get information via Queensland Cup, but in 2022, he missed quite a few weeks with a calf and concussions and those kind of things. But it sounded like he was in one of the concussions was having trouble with like recurring symptoms sort of over the, you know, the weeks after suffering it. So yeah, it's not, you know, his first time, and we know that when players have that checkered history with concussion, it does increase their risk of having some sort of concerns moving forward as well. So there is the NRL's 11-day stand down process. Now we're getting into this fun topic again, James, where we had so much fun with this last year trying to guess what 11 days actually meant. The Broncos' next game is in 11 days exactly. Now, I think someone commented on my post saying, what's the bet that they count? They count it as 12 days because it's still Saturday in Vegas.
Good so, call. Very good call.
Yeah,
very
it good wouldn't. Call. It would not surprise nah. me. So I think, I would be shocked if they said, from the precedent that was set last year with a lot of those players after the Anzac Day game still playing on the 11th day, I think theoretically Brendan Piacura will be able to play. It's just whether his concussion symptoms settle down in time would be probably the biggest question, just considering his history, I think. So Tupanua, I went back and reviewed these mechanisms. So Tupanua, you could see it was a lateral ankle sprain, so nothing really to worry about there at all. He actually, from what I could see, I couldn't even see any ice on his ankle post-game, but even if there was, not really a concern. Siwa Wong, this was an interesting one, and I will post this mechanism sometime over the next couple of days, and I think, I'm sorry I didn't get to show it to you before the show, actually, James. It was interesting, Payne Haas took a hit up, and Siwa Wong kind of met him front on and was getting pushed back, and it was almost like that eccentric lengthening of the Achilles as he was kind of putting his foot back to try and slow Payne Haas down. Now, it was I say eccentric lengthening, that's a long word to say. He was just kind of trying to decelerate Payne Haas, and he put his foot back to try and do that. It was a side-on view, so you couldn't see whether the ankle rolled one way or the other. That's a bit of a more interesting one than the Satili Tupanua one, in that if there's like an Achilles strain there, potentially, or something like that. He was walking around after the game, Siwa Wong. He was jumping around in the sheds after the game as well. So once again, not something that I think is anything major, but that one definitely has more interest to me than the Tupanua one in terms of potentially if there is a small strain there, could he need to miss 2 to 3 weeks or something like that? So yeah, some chance there. Billy Smith, I'm like, Look, I was probably not the biggest Billy Smith hater or anything like that, but I think there was a lot about Billy Smith a few years ago where I saw, you know, training-wise, it didn't look like he was, you know, kind of fully committed to that. The injuries were just piling one on top of the other, those kind of things. But I could not be more on the Billy Smith train the last 2 years, particularly since that latest ACL injury. He has just been, for his fourth ACL injury, I think third or fourth is off the top of my head, but it's like many ACL injuries. Yeah. He has just been so good with his rehab. His performance has been so excellent for a young guy coming back off so many ACLs. So for him to suffer a minor hamstring issue and make him miss something like this, and, you know, maybe he was only there because Dom Young was out, and then, like, Joseph Suaalii came out today and played so well. So I just feel for Billy Smith. This doesn't sound like it's anything major. I think with his injury history, obviously, they're definitely always going to play it smart with that and just take it a bit easy. But, yeah, I just feel for him, I think, more than anything. I think you're probably on the same sort of, you know, train as me. I think we've spoken about it that, yeah, he's just been so impressive in recent times.
He has been good, mate. I think it's a pretty jam-packed little outside back room there. Roosters have got some real depth in the outside backs and also the edge guys as well. So I think for fantasy, probably don't have more clarity this week than we did going into it, do we? I think minutes were pretty well shared across. Billy Smith getting ruled out probably makes Suaalii a bit more attractive there, but it's nothing really set in stone, is there? I think it's certainly situations to watch there for the fantasy nerds amongst us. Other injuries, Brian, I'm just going to rip off these names and we can talk about them in a bit more detail. There are a few that are fantasy relevant and there are a couple that are probably less relevant from that respect. To start off, ACL injuries to Tommy Gilbert from the Redcliffe Dolphins there and Cohen Hess. Sorry to bring that one up, Brian, and rough for Tom Gilbert, mate. Like off the back of shoulder Rico last year in Origin and ACL before round one. That's just terrible, terrible news. Cam Munster calf strain, Nico Hines quad strain, Sunia Taruva was a PCL sprain from the World Club Challenge, I think.
We'll go through a few to start with. So Tommy Gilbert and Cohen Hess obviously out for the year. I think big. Just devastation, especially, for a guy who was looking to, you know, lead the Finns, as captain. I think he's the spiritual leader at that club. And, yeah, that was just huge. And Cohen Hess, like, he's off contract. So that's a big, you know, big injury for him as well. I think that opens up, you know, and we'll talk about later, a guy like Jason Taumalolo or Ruben Cotter to potentially have some good stuff, you know, some better minutes and those kind of things. Cam Munster with a calf strain. I think this is a little bit interesting because, I think I said over on Patreon, I'd be interested in your take, but I just wouldn't touch him to start the season. I think we were both kind of here and or there on him to start the season anyway, but here you've got a calf strain that he suffered in the preseason and now he's aggravated it and they've said, look, he's touch and go. He's not, you know, fully integrated with the team yet, those kind of things. Where are you at on him? Because I pretty much said I just wouldn't start with him.
I think Dylan Brown's way more attractive, even though he's higher priced. His scores last year, when you look at them, they're just ridiculous. He's got a really good draw as well. I think Cam Munster's got a pretty gnarly one from memory to start off the season. So he's someone that I just wouldn't really be keen on to start with as well in the same vein as you, Brian.
Yeah, I think you put that on top of, like, even if you said for whatever reason you didn't want Dylan Brown, I probably would have gone with, like, taken the punt on an Ezra Mam or something like that. But I just don't think, I would try and find another option because those calves, they can linger around. They're notorious for lingering symptoms, those kind of things. 1 week could turn into 4 weeks. We've already seen him aggravate it once. So there's just uncertainty, and I don't like uncertainty when talking about injuries, and that'll segue me into Nico Hines with a quad strain. Not as much uncertainty here if the Sharks are saying, if what they're saying is true. So I think Nico, they've come out and said minor. There was internet rumours. Once again, my inbox was flooded with people. Someone must have spread a rumour this week that he'd already been ruled out. And look, potentially he may be on the wrong side of it, but just, yeah, chill out, guys. We're going to find out about it before any big decisions need to be made. The main issue with a quad is kicking and those kind of things, but if it's minor, I would just be shocked if it really stopped him from goal kicking, you know, all those kind of things. I think if he's fit, he'll be fine, especially having 2 or 3 weeks off until he needs to play that round one game. Sania Taruva with the PCL sprain. Yeah, I think he's in genuine doubt for round one. He did some rehab running this week. It is a PCL sprain. It's a PCL injury that he had been dealing with over the off-season. But another guy I just wouldn't, you know, if you, whatever reason, you were thinking about starting with him, I think probably your range is like round 1 to 3. He is still probably a chance for round 1, but I'd say probably that first 3 weeks. The main issue with PCL sprains is that performance implication on return. Like, usually guys are a little bit slower off the mark, those kind of things. If they cop another knock to the front of the knee, that can kind of aggravate things as well. So it just leaves him at an increased risk of aggravation and also an increased risk of, a risk of decreased performance in those first few weeks. The reason I stopped you, mate, is because I just want to talk about this guy specifically. Once you bring him up, I think we both need to talk about what we're going to do here.
Yeah, so Jackie Carraz is the one in question, back injury, which we've talked about before on the podcast, Brian. He's someone that I do have as basically my headline act in my center wing position. Enormous base last year, really good scores. He was playing on the right wing predominantly last year, so we need to keep that in mind. There are rumors he's going to be playing left center. So I don't know if that gives me enough cause for concern, I suppose, to take him out of my team, because I still think he could be someone that really outperforms where he's currently priced as. But I guess from your point of view, Brian, we've talked him up a lot this offseason. Are you starting with him in your centre wing startup?
Mate, I'll give some credit to the Patreon chat, because I threw it out there in the chat about potentially what position he could be playing, and straight away they said Critter played left centre in the last trial, so I'd say once again Kiraz is going to be in that right centre, which is wonderful. That's where you want him. You know, he's got that right hand carry, left hand fend, those kind of things. So that definitely gives me a little bit more confidence. I guess I definitely like him at wing more than I like him at centre, like 110%. The main thing for me, I guess, is the fact that he's only just coming back, obviously, into full training. You know, he's only, like that, that the fact that he has only just returned from that back injury, that's a lot longer than I would have expected. I was thinking he would be back in full training sort of early January and then building the performance over the last 6 to 8 weeks. So he's still a buy for me. He's not locked into my team, which is a bit of a controversial take at this point in time. I want him because I still think, to your point, he's absolutely going to outperform his price. Like, I don't think that's a doubt at this point in time, but there are other options that, especially with Piakura just scoring me like 4 points, I think chasing some upside here and there, it could be boom or bust, but that's how I like to play classic, because obviously my background in draft makes me a little bit more happy to do those kind of things. But yeah, I think he's still a rock solid buy, and I'll stick to the buy the year call because, yeah, I'm not backing back off that kind of thing. I'm still happy to stick to that, but he's definitely not as locked in as he used to be for me.
Yeah, for me and my team, it's either him or Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. So I don't have Roger in my team at the moment, despite how good he looked in the preseason. So I think it'll be one or the other there for those guys, respectively. Other names here, Brian, we'll just list a few more. So Connor Tracy, calf injury, Jaden Brayley and Jacob Little, hamstring strains. Do you want to talk to any of them in a bit more depth?
Yeah, I think Connor Tracy, Gus said, will be back in round 2 via New South Wales Cup, just in case anybody missed that, yep. A la me, because I'm blocked by him. Thankfully, I have lots of people who message me that stuff. So yeah, round 2, New South Wales Cup. So just for anybody, like, that obviously gives Jacob Kiraz a bit more time to cement his role, those kind of things, which is good. I think that, though, like, if Bronson Cherry, for example, can't make the round 1 side and you've got Connor Tracy coming back, it's not great signs. If you've drafted him or if you're planning on having him, or like planning him on your bench, those kind of things. Jaden Brayley, he's definitely going to miss round one. Jacob Little is touch and go for round one. He looks on the better side of probable, or yeah, it just looks more probable than not to play. But yes, just that risk of injury. I think we've spoken about Jaden Brayley in great detail. I just don't go there. Just don't go there at all.
Yep, good shout. Last three, Chancellor Kukoczar, hamstring slash back injury. Braden Hamlin-Whaley has had knee surgery, and Blake Laurie's carrying a rib injury. Looks like rib cartilage there. I guess for the fantasy relevant ones, probably Chance, isn't it? He's probably the one that's most relevant. Had a sensational season last year at the back there for the Warriors.
Yeah, I think Chance is definitely relevant here because you've got, I want to get this right, once again, Tuipiki, I think, is the fullback who has been there at the moment. Look, the reason I mentioned Chance, there's been mixed reporting on when he's due back. There's been some of the New Zealand media saying, you know, he's only touch and go for round one. Others are like, he's definitely going to miss the first 3 weeks. I think the uncertainty here comes from the fact that this isn't just a hamstring issue. He's also getting back, there is a related back issue as well. There's a big history of guys dealing with this kind of thing in the NRL, notably Sean Johnson, his teammate. So dealt with lower back issues that they thought was then contributing to, you know, lower limb muscle strains. Now, it's not set in stone and proven, but effectively what they think is some irritation in the back, you know, affects the nerves that run down, you know, compensation, those kind of things down into the legs can make you more susceptible to muscle strains, those kind of things. So unless you fix the back, you're going to keep having these strains is kind of how they approach it. So for Chance, I think that's a bit concerning that there is the back there. I think it makes sense as to why there's differing kind of recovery, I guess, predictions, because this isn't as straightforward as like a grade one hamstring 2 to 4 weeks. Once the back's involved, it's a little bit more muddied. So it makes a guy like Tuipiki a little bit more attractive to me, I think. Like I'll throw to you before I go through Hamlin-Whaley and Laurie. Like how are you approaching, I guess, the New Zealand Warriors cheapies and backline with this Chance news? Is it something where you'd be more likely to roll the dice upon the cheapies? Are you still happy to be like, look, Chance, I'm pretty confident he'll be back?
Happy to roll a cheapie, Brian. I think especially for the first few weeks, if it can save me some money for fullback, halfback, and the mid-range second row forwards as well. So I'm happy to roll Tuipiki in probably like my starting center wing setup. If he's at fullback, I'm just going to roll him as a starter. I think there's worse options out there than to do that. If you've got a fullback who's a starter and you can plug him in at center wing, I think you just do it. Even if you don't know what he is as a super coach commodity, I think you just back that. You know, it's a pretty good team he's setting up in as well. You've got some good, you know, seasoned vets around him. I don't think that's the worst thing to do, is to start him off there rather than let him ride the pine and hope he generates a lot of cash. So I'm pretty happy to roll there, to be fair.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think he's in my side at the moment, and it's something where I'm happy. Like, it is a bit awkward because he's just that little bit above basement price. He's that little bit more expensive. But I just think for a fullback who he's coming into a team where there's some doubt around Chance and when he will be back, and then even when he's back there's a risk of, you know, injury again, the thing that concerns me more, to be honest, is Roger. Like, do they just go, yeah, look, Roger's obviously killing it, we need him back at fullback. I know they've said they won't do that, but I think Roger played a half at fullback in the trial the other day, so that's probably the thing that concerns me the most, even more than Chance coming back, because I think there's enough doubt around Chance to make Tuipiki a good buy. I just worry about Roger. And then Braden Hamlin-Whaley, I mentioned this purely because I've got quite a few questions on him in regards to Royce Hunt, because Royce Hunt obviously is fairly cheap. Do we think Braden Hamlin-Whaley is going to be out for a long time with this knee issue? Guys, I wish I had more information for you. Literally, I scoured the ends of the earth to try and come up with something here. all Cronulla have said all off-season is he's had a knee surgery. They haven't really given much detail as to when he returned to running, when he, you know, was back in full training, all that kind of stuff. The most recent report from the Daily Telegraph was that he's going to be rested for round one and that he's due back in the early rounds. So, look, for me, I just don't think... I don't think you can... Like, you would expect Hamlin Ewele to need to ease back to a full workload, you know, coming back from something like this. But it's just not enough for me to think that Royce Hunt is going to be a buy. And then Blake Laurie, I think with the rib cartilage, he's 50-50 to play, but even if he does play, you expect his performance to be decreased.
Yeah, probably nothing else I really want to wrap up there, Brian. So we might go straight into the Patreon questions. We've got a few to get through tonight. As Brian mentioned earlier, patreon.com/NRL physio. If you want some things answered, you want more content, you want to help fund Brian getting over to Vegas next year for 2020-25. That'd be the way to go about it. So get on the Patreon there and follow Brian. So first question is about the risks for all these guys flying back from Vegas. What are the risks that they have flying back so far after suffering injuries? Do you want to talk to those things a bit?
Yeah, mate, I think it's definitely a valid question. And, you know, guys like Jason Saab, like he's got that hamstring issue. He's then got to sit on that hamstring issue for 16, 17 hours. Now, obviously, they're going to be in business class. They'll be lying back, so there won't be as much pressure there. But travel, such long form travel so soon after any kind of soft tissue injury is less than ideal. You've got the decreased cabin pressure. You've got dehydration. Immobility is the big one, so you don't have the capacity to kind of move around. And while a lot of people may hear that and go, oh, but he's just injured, wouldn't you want him to rest it? A big thing I want to get out there just in general, not just for professional athletes, but for anybody out there who suffers soft tissue injuries, no, we don't want to rest it a lot of the time. I'm not telling you to go out and, you know, run a marathon or anything like that, but we know active recovery is so important these days for soft tissue strains, sprains, these kind of things. So if you've got anyone out there, you know, throwing you in boots or on crutches and stuff like that for calf strains, these kind of things, I would definitely question those, because that's old school. That's very, very old school. We know we like active recovery. So immobility is a big thing. You've got, like, it's just the reduced healing. You've got reduction in blood flow to the extremities, you know, these kind of things. It's just a less than ideal sort of place to be in those first, particularly those first 3 days post-injury when a lot of your healing process is kicking in and those kind of things. Swelling is happening, bleeding is occurring, and for someone like Jason Saab, there potentially could be bleeding. He could have a grade two hamstring strain, which is a partial tear of that muscle. So there could be quite significant bleeding there as well. So up in the air, you're sitting, you're not moving all that much, you're dehydrated. It's going to be a big priority for those medical teams to get these guys really hydrated, get them moving, making sure that they're not just lying down and sleeping for 6-8 hours, as much as that would be good for recovery as well. The guys with ankle sprains, I said, like, as much as they're not that big a deal now, the swelling, they're going to swell up. We talk about, I'm sure there are people who are listening who wear like compression stockings when they fly to try and decrease the risk of swelling, DVT, these kind of things. Now you add in an injury on top of that. So these guys they're going to be up against it. It's going to be a tough one. It's going to reduce their ability to heal over the next couple of days. So it will slow things down a little bit. Obviously, they're in the best of hands, so they'll minimize it. But for you or I, if we go over to Vegas next year and we pull a hammy, mate, we're going to be in all sorts if we're traveling home the next day, that's for sure. I had someone ask about concussion, like traveling back and stuff like that. It's only really an issue if there's a suspicion of a fracture or a brain bleed, like hemorrhage, that kind of thing, which I don't think either of those things are an issue for Piakura, but that's the thing to consider with those. Mate, look, you work in a hospital, probably more medical minded than me in these kind of things. Have you got anything, any considerations there for these guys traveling back so soon after suffering injuries?
The only final one that I've heard through other sports psychologists, Brian, and psychologists as well, they talk a lot about sleep and the benefits of sleep. So I think I know someone specifically who works with individual athletes, so triathletes mainly, and then there's also cyclists as part of that. They plan their travel around delaying travel after an event for about 24, at least 48 hours, I think, if they can. I think they normally say the longer the better, because if they can get nutrition on, they can get sleep in, they recover so much better with all the distance stuff. So I don't know what the schedule is with these guys. I don't know what the time pressures are with the week-to-week of the NRL. But ideally, yeah, you don't want to be going straight after the game, if that's at all possible, just for the benefit of sleep. Because obviously if you're in business, you can get some decent sleep, but it's not the same as getting a good night's sleep in your bed and getting back on, you know, you got to get back in the rhythm as well. Sometimes you might have jet lag on the other side, so you got to get your body back in its normal circadian rhythm too. So that'd be the only other add-on from that point of view, Brian. That'd be the only other thing. Second question from Patreon. What about the injury risks and concerns you have for Dom Young in week two or week three or week four, whenever he's scheduled to return back?
Yeah, very minimal. I think we spoke about it at the time when he suffered it. I think with these crusher injuries, I think this ligament tear would happen. I shouldn't even put it in inverted commas, but I just say that because I think these kind of ligament tears would happen a lot more commonly in crusher tackle victims if you scan them all. So I still think crusher tackles are horrible and can do quite a bit of damage, but I just think people have heard ligament tears with Dom Young and are treating Dom Young differently to any other of their players who'd suffered crushes in the past, where I think while I don't want you to treat them like those players in the past, I think it's that middle ground, right? Where it's like, you don't have to freak out. The re-injury risk really come down to just hopefully he doesn't get crushed again is probably the biggest thing. Yeah, if he gets crushed again, I mean, that's bad luck most of the time. It can be like a bit of a technique thing, potentially, if he's turning his back a lot and those kind of things. But I think re-injury risk and concerns, not really. And then like mentally, you could argue, is he a little bit more hesitant into contact with a neck injury? But a lot of these guys are just 10 foot tall and bulletproof, so they just are maniacs and run into brick walls. So I just am not overly concerned with him when he does return.
No, I'm on the same wavelength there with you, Brian. So we'll move on to the next question. What about expectations on David Fifita's return? I think we initially spoke about him returning in round three, which would be after their scheduled bye in round two. Any further news on David Fifita?
Yeah, I think there was an interview with AJ Brimson this week, and he kind of said, yeah, I think he's aiming for round three, and that would track with what we said. I think round three is pretty highly likely for him. Interestingly, I think somebody said during the trial that Jaden Campbell said he might be aiming for round three as well, and that was something we were a bit dubious on as to whether he'd be able to be back then. I think for me, I'm just, even if he does come back in round three, I just have question marks over his performance. The fact that he's, you know, he wasn't in full team training until at least mid-Feb. It's just not a lot of time to build performance over that time. So I think even if he's back, like for a classic perspective, you just sit, wait and watch. And then from a draft perspective, I think if you've drafted him, you're kind of stuck with him. He might be a good like buy low proposition if he starts out and doesn't look so good. Maybe you can get him on the cheap because 5'8 is a real trash position. But yeah, I think for me, David Fifita is pretty locked in unless he has some sort of aggravation, which you wouldn't expect. And then Jaden Campbell, I'd say somewhere in that round 3 to 5 range at this point in time.
Very good, Brian. Last question here. This is a good question from Patreon. They said, am I a superior athlete to Tom Trbojevic and Cameron Munster? Brave. Solely because I've never slipped over in the shower. Because that's been the reported mechanism for those boys with a couple of injuries, hasn't it?
Mate, Ben, he is I think he's like the magic sponge on Twitter too. He's one of the best blokes going around, Ben. And this is a good bloke question as well. Look, Ben, we all know you are a superior athlete, and there is not many people who could claim that over a Tom Trbojevic and a Cameron Munster, but I'll give it to him. The one way I will answer this in a half-serious way is that I have people ask me this all the time, which is fair enough, because they're like, surely this doesn't happen. Like, there's got to be something else. And I was on record at the time, even when Turbo suffered it, and I'm like, as unlikely as it sounds, it does happen. Like, I reckon I'd see at least half a dozen every year of, like, either slipping in the shower, getting out of the shower, wet tiles, these kind of things. Look, I'll admit, mostly in elderly people. Like, you know, you're usually talking about your elderly population, but I've seen it in athletes too. And I have seen it. So yeah, it's not that far-fetched that I'm like, there's no way this is true, because it can happen. And especially with like Munster with his calf, with calves being notorious for aggravation and that kind of thing, I can absolutely see it, because it wouldn't take much. It'd be something where, like, you know, if you're fully fit and healthy, you have like a minor slip and you don't even think about it. But here, just because he's already got the calf issue, it kind of aggravates it. But yeah, James, I don't know. Have you ever had any shower-related injuries? We won't. We are past 9:30.
Shower ones. Yeah, I'm trying to think specifically about shower injuries. But to your point about how things happen, Brian, we see way, way, way more things that are just bizarre, out of the blue, something you just cannot mitigate, compared to people doing dumb shit who end up in like bad situations because it's like dumb stuff that they're doing. Like, I can think of, so someone I saw relatively recently, this is a really strange one. So she was only probably in her mid-20s there, thereabouts, and she broke both her wrists at the same time, flicking a towel out before she went to put it on the line. So she gave herself double distal radius fractures from like flicking a towel before she was going to hang it out. So yeah, she was like someone who was just conservatively managed, plaster both hands from like, and she had like no underlying medical history, no poor bone stock, no other health concerns. It was just one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen. But it just goes to show, some people can just end up in like injury situations or musculoskeletal situations that are just hard to believe almost. And you know, we've got, you know, probably numerous things that we can recount on those sort of things. And it happens. It just does. And that's just the nature of it, isn't it?
Yeah, mate, if I went through my list, I think I've got a list, we'd be here all night. So, I think to your point, yeah, it just, these things happen. I think in the NRL, we are conditioned to question these kind of sus sounding things because of what NRL players are and what they've done in the past and that kind of thing. But I think particularly the Turbo one, because
very tinfoily here, Brian. Yeah, I like it. You're getting there.
The Turbo one, the fact that he sprinted the night before, that was always a little bit more dubious. But I think this Munster one, I think it's pretty straightforward. I think we can trust Cam here. Good Queenslander too, James. So, you know, yeah, right. Never met an untrustworthy
horse playing a shower if you're a Queenslander, that's for sure.
All right, guys. So that's questions up. James, I wanted to throw to you a very mini Supercoach corner this week. It's final teams, mate. Like, I think we talked about our teams last week, kind of where we were at with it. Can you talk me through, have you got any final team decisions that you're tossing up between? I've got one decision in particular that's doing my head in, but have you got any that you're still not set on heading into this week?
Yeah, I've got two, and one affects the other, so I'll sort of list them together. So the first sort of headache conundrum I've got is Jason Taumalolo as a second front rower. So I've got Max King up front there, because let's talk Max King very quickly while we're on it. So off-season, by the year sort of candidate as well, recently married, has recently sort of had photos confirmed with partner. So obviously congrats on the sex to Max King, because he's doing some good things off the field as well as on the field. Played through injury last year. Good solid acquisition in the front row four there. So he's rock solid. I've got Jason Taumalolo as front row two. So I had a look at him and I thought, well, Cohen Hess has gone for the year with ACL. Jordan McLean is often injured as well. It doesn't look like they want to play Ruben Cotter for the full 80 minutes. I think Jason Taumalolo could fall into a pretty solid 50, 55 minutes there, potentially. You never know with Todd Payton, because there has been silly buggers with minutes. But then Taumalolo has been a little bit injury affected last year. He had sort of two hand fractures last year and another injury, Brian, which sort of evades me off the top of my head. But the other thing when you look at his stats is he hasn't scored a meat pie in 2 years. So you just think, surely Jason Taumalolo may well be due for a meat pie or two, just to sort of pump up a few weeks here or there, or maybe he's going to be throwing more offloads. I don't know. I just don't know how it's going to work out, but I sort of want a piece of Taumalolo for what he's going for. I think he's a reasonable buy in front row, because if I take him there, then I don't have Josh Curran in my second row as it stands. I want to see where he gets named on Team List Tuesday. So I think if Josh Curran gets named at 13, I may well flip over there and put Curran into my second row there, because obviously Piakura only scored me 4 today, and I'll go cheap at front row. But I just want to see what that looks like for the Bulldogs, because there's so much competition for, you know, those bench spots, those 13 sort of hybrid, you know, interchange roles that the Dogs have there. They've got a lot of players in that that can fill those positions. So I just feel like Tamalolo can fall into a pretty good spot there. Not too many other competitions for minutes there. Again, you've lost Cohen Hess. You've got Ruben Cotter, that they're not going 80 too much. Jordan McLean's always injured with soft tissue stuff. We've talked about him a lot on the Magic Sponge. And then I guess Griffin Neem's the smoky, but he's off the bench. So I think Tamalolo looks to me like a reasonable buy. He's not going to be what he was in the past. You know, obviously, Supercoach Gunn, all-timer. But I still think in the front row position, he's also dual. That's also semi-handy. I think you could do a lot worse than running him out as a second front row, to be fair.
Mate, I like the take. I said in the injury profiles, I couldn't find a lot of injury reason for his down year last year because he stayed the same post-surgery. And like a meniscectomy, very rarely, I mean, yeah, correct me. But correct me if I'm wrong, James, like that's a pretty predictable recovery surgery. Like how it's going to be a rare occurrence for a player to struggle. Like he struggled for 4 or 5 months after surgery, you know, after that surgery. So I'm like, for me, I just don't think there's major injury implications there from last season. But the implication for me is that, look, I said that Todd Payton obviously uses him in a different way and he's getting a little bit older and stuff like that. I think I had a look in the seasons leading into Payton coming on board, Tamalolo averaged like 70s. It was like 72, 77 and 74 or something like that. Then Payton came on board and he averaged like 57, 54 and now 43. But for me, I'm like, surely he goes from, with Cohen Hess out especially too, even if you're not expecting him back up at that 70, surely he goes back up to that 54, 55, right? So you've still got 10 to 12 points in value, even like if you don't talk about an injury perspective there. I think surely he's a mid-50s. He's got to be a mid-50s player.
Yeah. There's one other thing that I think as well, Brian, is we haven't seen Todd Payton on the hot seat from a coaching point of view either. In the years gone by, he's used Tamalolo sparingly, but they've always been there, thereabouts. Even last year, they were much, much better the season before when they were flying high and he wasn't using him in big minutes. I just wonder if the rubber hits the road and the Cowboys are staring down the barrel of missing the eight, whether Todd Payton goes, you know what, I've really got to lean on Ruben Cotter and Tamalolo here to punch out pretty big minutes. I wonder if that sort of happens by the nature of what it is. I don't think that's an unrealistic thing because I don't know if you can really expect the Cowboys to bounce back to where they were. I think they're going to be pushing for the eight, but they're in that big group of teams that you can make a bull case and you know, a bear case for them. Where they end up, who knows? But I think maybe even just the pressure of the role and the pressure on wins and losses might lean Payton in that way a little bit more. I don't know. That's just another sort of aspect of it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. For my team, my biggest decision, it's something you touched on there, mate, and I'd love your thoughts as a bit of a footy head. I'm just going to go on a little 30-second rant. Like, what is going on with the Bulldogs in terms of, is the team not 20 times better with Critter at fullback, Josh Curran at 13, Toby Sexton at 7, I just look at the team with like Taff, Jamin Salmon, Drew Hutchison. I just don't know. I don't know. Like, I'm not sitting here professing to be like some footy expert or something like that. But surely, as an opposition team, if I looked across and that was the team coming at me, like your Josh Curran at 13, Toby Sexton at 7, Critter at 1. I'd just be so much more worried, I feel like. And the reason I say I'm stressing about my team is because I just want to pick Josh Curran even if he's named on the bench. Because I'm like, even if he's named on the bench, surely it can't be long before he demands a big minutes role in that pack.
Yep.
Like, I just don't see how with that pack there that, and look, I'd love to be proven wrong, but if Jamin Salmon is still a big minute lock by the end of the season, I would just be shocked, flabbergasted, because yeah, I just think Josh Curran he's shown he's just that good. Maybe that's a bit of my bias, but I mean, where, like, do you relate to any of that? Do you think I'm on the money, off the money? What do you
got for me? Yeah, bang on. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think I still don't understand why Stephen Crichton's not being given fullback. I've always, you know, been a fairly big slurper of Stephen Crichton, what he puts down on this podcast. Everyone knows that. Everyone's aware of that. I think I even said last year I'd pick him in Origin, and everyone was like, "Oh, geez, it's a bit of a smoky." And I just think he's the real deal. I think you put him at fullback, I think you see what he's got there to offer. You know, same thing with Toby Sexton. I think he's a really good seven, but I don't really understand the Hutchinson picks. Then you've got two left foot kickers. How does that work with Burton? And then obviously you've got, you know, where does Curran fit in there with all the other players? I don't know. To me, he looks like the standout 13. He's sort of been on another podcast, I think, with Denton Kemp as well, saying he wants to play pretty big minutes in that role. The stars sort of seem to line up there, but I really want to see his name at 13. Otherwise, I don't think I can take a punt on him week one. I think I'd have to put my money elsewhere into a Taumalolo and be happier just there and just saying, look, is it probably going to get me a 60-point average? Probably not, but I think he's probably going to be pretty solid for a second front role there, and I'll try to make some money elsewhere.
And then my sneaky pod that I'm tossing up between at the moment, I've got two spots, and it's between Tuivasa Sheck, Kiraz, and my smoky is Inari Tuula. Now, I'm going to explain this because I don't think Inari Tuula is mega, you know, like the best player going around. It's literally getting a piece of the Newcastle Knights backline, who, thanks to Aman Talks Supercoach, who's one of the Patreons, and if you don't follow Aman, go over and hit him up on any of the social media things. He posted something where both for fullbacks and outside backs, the Knights have the softest draw. I think it's the first five weeks and the first 10 weeks. They've got the softest draw. Wow. And I'm so like, this is what I'm like. I'm like, if I can get a piece of that back line for $445,000 when all of the rest of the back line are, you know, $550,000, $600,000 plus.
Greg Miles, you $780,000, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know what I mean? Like, if yeah. And then I'm backing Kalen Ponga to keep doing what he's doing, you know, could Inari Tuula be a nice little smoky as just an upside? That's my... I'm just going to throw that on the fire, and then we're going to finish the podcast because I don't want people to flame me too hard. But, yeah, I'm eyeing off Inari Tuula pretty hard just purely because of what Aman posted about the softness of the draw for the Knights to start, especially the first, like, 10 weeks. And I don't think... Well, I could be wrong, but I don't think they've got a bye. So, like, 10 weeks, soft draw, KP slinging it on the right wing. And KP, I know, plays on the left, but he can sling it left to right. Like, that's his dominant hand. So,
yeah
mate, that's the one I'm on off at the moment, Inari Tuula. Never thought I would say that. But, yeah, that's where I'm at. And
I'll
put like that down to Aman and his research because that was really good. But,
No, that's red hot. I love that. I love that. Yeah. And looking at the draw now, so we've got Raiders, Cowboys, Storm, Warriors, Dragons, Roosters, Bulldogs, Dolphins, Warriors, West Tigers round 10, Titans round 11, and then bye. It's pretty good. And then they play 13 as well. So, because 13 is the first big bye. So, and they get the Bulldogs again there. So.
Yeah, so there's concerns there because I think there were some reports, and I think it was just from dodgy like Instagram accounts or something saying like Will Price was training at center. So there is, but like I always follow like Barry Tuohy on Twitter. He's just
Barry Tuohy's got the source.
Oh, yeah, man, he's good. He's your Knights guy, and he's effectively been like mocking people who have tried to say that Tuula isn't the winger. Like, he's been openly like, go back and check your dud sources effectively for people who are suggesting that he shouldn't just start alpha. So, yeah, I don't know. Inari Tuula, mate, I would not be shocked if it comes to Thursday lockout and Inari Tuula is in my CTW.
Yeah, it's a really good shout. I don't know what his ownership is, Brian. I don't have that right in front of me, but I'd assume it would be very, very, very low. Probably Inari owns himself, I'd imagine, and maybe not too many other people. But it's a pretty good shout because the draw there, you make a great point. It's not a super tough one. And the thing is, I think the Knights outside backs just outperformed everyone's expectations last year. They're pretty matchup proof, the outside backs there. I don't think you'd have any qualms with sort of starting him there. If he gets a little bit extra, then all good. I think play on.
I love it, mate. I love it. I confirm my bias, and thank you to Aman for that awesome info. Go follow him. But otherwise, guys, that's a wrap for this week. You like the pod, give us a review, recommend to a friend. It does make a big difference. We've been around for a while, so yeah, the more we can kind of keep those reviews, recommendations coming, it does make a big difference getting us in front of new eyes and those kind of things. Want more info like this, patreon.com/NRLphysio. We are on YouTube now, so head on over to YouTube, subscribe, all that kind of stuff. James, real round one continues this week. It's pretty exciting stuff. My Finns, I'll be going along on the Sunday to see the Finns beat the Cows by, you know, 50, 60 points, which will be great. Might see you on Saturday night, which will be good. But, mate, have a good week. I hope you don't cry yourself to sleep too much tonight over your wonderful Broncos.
No, mate, she'll be right. We'll be back on as the weeks go on. And obviously good luck to the Finns for you for the round one. Hopefully you get a big start like last year was for you as well, wasn't it? It was a big first game for the Finns last year.
I'm counting on it, mate. Tommy Gilbert revenge game from the sideline.
In Wayne we trust. In Wayne we trust. We doubted him last year, and look how that turned out.
I'll pray at the Church of Wayne until he retires, I promise. On that note, up the mighty, mighty Redcliffe Dolphins, guys.
Suspected broken left fibula.
Suffering syndesmosis.
After that stem cell injury that he's come back from?
That's about it, mate.